ask you, we invite you, as our songwriter says, will you be one of those who hear, who believe? This, our closing song, the first verse says, whosoever heareth, shout, shout the sound. That's what we've been trying to do tonight. Send the blessed tidings all the world around. Spread the joyful news wherever man is found. Whosoever will, may come. Whosoever will, whosoever will. Send the blessed tidings over vale and hill. 'Tis the loving Father calls a wanderer home. Whosoever will, may come.
It was in a Dickensian era of mid-Victorian London, when public hangings attracted large, eager crowds, that William Booth laid the groundwork for the Salvation Army. Welfare states were undreamed of, and children of 8 years and up worked 12 and 14 hours a day in the mines and mills. The Industrial Revolution was luring agricultural workers away from the countryside into the densely crowded quarters of the cities, which quickly became slums. Schooling was non-existent. Untaxed gin was a penny a glass, and while the new industrialists became wealthy and respectable pillars of their churches, the poor lived like outcasts in their own country. The system needed a pool of spare labour, so they competed hotly for the right to work for near-starvation wages, 16 hours a day, 6 days a week. Drunkenness, even among children, was common. Crime was rampant. It was clear that the conventional Protestant churches were not getting to grips with this problem, so Booth resigned his comfortable living as a Methodist parson to move among the poor, preaching to them in their own surroundings, stables, bowling alleys, and the like. In 1878, with his wife beside him, he named his mission the Salvation Army, and he organized it along military lines with himself as general. In 1880, they moved into Ireland and the United States. Today, it operates in 82 countries, running hospitals, clinics, leper colonies, homes for the handicapped and alcoholics, and hostels for the destitute. They minister to people of all creeds. But it must be remembered that care for the needy is the means, not the end. The Salvation Army is an evangelical mission, a religious denomination in itself, a form of Protestantism, and its object is to spread the gospel and increase its flock.
Dear friends, tonight we have brought you but a glimpse of the gospel, but a glimpse of the glorious truths contained in the scriptures. And we would invite you, if your interest has been whetted, to join with us now as we proceed back to our hall in Lower Abbey Street for our meeting, which will commence at 7 o'clock. We don't want you to come in any sort of finery. We just want you to come as you are. The gospel is for whoever wants to hear, for whoever wants to listen. If you want to join with us, that invitation is open to you, to our worship together in the Salvation Army Hall in Lower Abbey Street. The final verse that we will sing together before we close this meeting in prayer says these words: whosoever will, the promise is secure. Whosoever will, forever shall endure. Whosoever will, 'tis life forevermore. Whosoever will, may come.
Like so many Salvationists, I share with William Booth the fact that I'm a first generation Salvationist, Norman, having no members of my family connected with the army at all.
Captain John Brooke Smith, who is a senior Salvation Army officer in the Republic of Ireland.
There are some, as you know, 2 million Salvationists, and the bulk of those are laypersons. But the growing conviction about society and the spiritual needs of society was such that I felt called to the ministry. And I then found myself, after my training, commissioned as a Salvation Army officer. I in the course of that period of time, in the early days as an officer, I met the young lady who's now my wife, Joan. She too was a Salvation Army officer. I ought to qualify perhaps the difference between the two. The lay Salvationist has his own employment, or her own employment. The Salvation Army officer is, if you like, the priesthood structure of the Salvation Army. And a man officer can only marry a woman officer. And failing to do that would automatically mean that I would have to resign my commission. We're commissioned as Salvation Army officers, or commissioned, if you like, as accredited ministers of religion. That goes right back to the New Testament. It would be true to say that my appointment to Ireland was like every other appointment. When we become Salvation Army officers, we commit ourselves to go where and when the Salvation Army so chooses. Generally speaking, in the month of May, we are told we're moving. A week from the day we're told where we're going. And a fortnight from that day, we arrive in our new appointment to take up whatever our responsibilities happen to be. Prior to coming here, I spent some 6 years in Northern Ireland and then came here to the South. And I must say that in both cases, I've been absolutely delighted, happy to be here. The people have been most friendly. Some folks say to me, how do you feel about being in a Catholic country? The Salvation Army has never, from its inception, asked a man's religion. I see people as people, and I like to think that they see me just exactly the same way. And it's evident by the support that the Salvation Army has that the Catholic people of Ireland have a high regard for us. That, of course, puts the onus back on me. I have a great deal to live up to. It means that my forefathers have done a good job by living out the Christian gospel.
Christ gives. second verse of the chorus.
Comparable to any of the 68 countries in which we operate. We have, for example, here our hostel accommodation for men in the city of Dublin, and that would give us something like 800 men in a week who would provide beds for. We would provide in the city of Dublin some 2,000 meals per week, probably a little over, but that would certainly be the main course meals. We also have in the city here on the north side some accommodation for young girls on probation. They're brought to us by the probation department, and in conjunction with the Department of Justice, we would care for these girls, giving them accommodation, hopefully some basic training, and it's in most cases we attempt to find employment for them. You can appreciate that that's all important to them. It's a very difficult area in this day and age. We have a number of various departments which are attached to my office here. As administrator, I oversight our public relations department. This, in fact, is a twofold department. One, it hopefully gives information, and as a result of that information, the result is income toward the various activities, because you'll appreciate the financing of the Salvation Army of the Republic is considerable. Last year, some £270,000 would be something like the running costs here in the city, and that doesn't include the capital expenditure. So you know, therefore, from that statement, we largely depend on the general public to support our work, and that comes from youngsters at school to local parish priests to some folks who've been donors for 20, 30, 40 years. And that's the sort of a background that the Public Relations Department would deal with. We would show films in the schools and in various other centres. There's our missing persons department, which operates from here. Again, that's in conjunction with our international missing persons department. The bureau for that is in London. Probably in Ireland here, we would deal with some 400 to 500 cases. That would be new cases. That's from the Irish end. We would have the others coming, the flow from the other direction, trying to trace people here. But we would have something like 400 to 500 cases a year. The solved cases, in our statistics suggest, are something like 600 a month. So that in itself is pretty time consuming, but we find that most people are extremely helpful. There's a number of departments that come under our offices locally. Our hostels, of course, that I've mentioned previously, are managed by our offices there.
Hi, Frank.
Hello, I'd like to book in for the week. Please.
You want to book for the week? Yeah. It's room 108, isn't
108,
it?
Yeah.
108, okay, Frank, there you are, you know. That's £18.20, Frank.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. There's your ticket.
Thank you.
When my mother died in 1974, I arrived at the Ivy Hostel. I was there for a year. Then a friend of mine took me out of it. About 40 took me out of the... rang up this place, see if they have a bed. So we got word to move in here. And I'm happy ever since in here. I get up in the morning, 7:30, go down for my breakfast, come back up again, have a wash, go out for a ramble, come back in again for my dinner, 12:30. I go upstairs, tidy up, then I go out, do a little bit of work. Then I come arrive back in here at 7:00, stay in for the night. You'd have a look at the telly. I don't know if it's a fine night. I might go out again for a ramble around. I might have a bottle of Guinness if I feel like it. Like then, and then come back again at 10 o'clock, get into bed and do the same thing the next morning. Up again at 7:30, down for me breakfast, back up again and go out. and the same thing again for me dinner. Come back at 12:30. That's the same thing from Monday to Sunday.
And you come to the services here?
Not tomorrow. I go to my own service in St. Anne's in Dawson Street.
When your mother died, was it that you had nowhere to go or that you preferred?
Well, I didn't like the place. The gangs around, you know, these muggers and everything. You know.
And you didn't want to live in your own anyway?
I didn't want to live on my own.
That's the important thing.
I want to talk to people, you know. Able to talk to people.
And you have, over the years, made friends here.
I've made a lot of friends.
And you've settled here. And you have any desire to leave here?
No, I want a desire, but I have no desire.
You don't want to go back and set up in your own bedsitter anywhere?
No.
You're quite happy here?
Quite happy here.
I'm in charge of this hostel, and I take in 113 men who are classed as the single homeless in Dublin. Now, these men range from an age of 18 to 70. The majority are in the 50s, late 40s, 50s, and early 60s. There's quite a good percentage work. We go out every day and work. Quite a few do casual work. We only have about 5 men which I wouldn't call regulars in the hostel. The rest are permanent men, some who have lived for 20 and even 30 years in this hostel under the care of the Salvation Army. The 113 men who live in the hostel each have their own cubicle, which to someone who's normal isn't very much, being 4 walls, a bed, a little wardrobe, a chair. But one of the things what all the men do like in this hostel is each man has his own light, which shines downwards from the wall. Where it differs from many other hostels, on a night time, no one pulls the fuse out, and these men, if awake during the night, can sit and read a book in the privacy of their own room. Every man who books into the hostel books in for bed and breakfast for a week. It is part of our policy that a man should at least have one good meal a day, and that being his breakfast, and he pays for that as he books in. After breakfast, if a man wishes, he could have his lunch in the hostel or his tea, which are both cooked meals. We also do a Meals on Wheels service for the old people who live in our district, and also do subsidised meals, which the Eastern Health Board pay for. We get quite a few of people in the hostel from the neighbourhood, quite a few old ladies and old men who not only stay for their meal, but will sit afterwards and chat to the residents or to myself or to anyone really who will take time to listen to them. We have also in the hostel, we have a television room, which is supposedly strictly for residents only. But of course, after a man has had his meal, you can't really stop him going to watch his favourite programme on the television. So we get quite a few in at night time watching the television. I find that they will watch anything from higher maths to the latest football results. They vary in their interests as they vary in their shapes and sizes. We have quite a few men from all over Ireland, from down country as they say, from Cork, Kerry, and we have quite a few men from Northern Ireland who have come down to Dublin to find work. We also at this present time have a boy from the Ivory Coast. We have a man from New Zealand, and we have just had a man who left last week who came from Sweden. So as you can see, we have a quite variety of men in the hostel. They are good men, really. I am quite privileged to have the best hostel in the city of Dublin as far as trouble is concerned. There has been virtually no trouble in this hostel for the 2 years where I have been manager. There's been no violence, no outbreak of violence, or nothing like that. I'm not saying that the men in this hostel are angels. Like men in most hostels, they all have a problem, or they wouldn't be here in the first place. And if we look into it closely, we would find that maybe the problem would not be drink, but be related to drink, one way or another. They are good men who just need caring for.
Thank you.
would be interesting too, I'm sure, to the Irish people to know that the Salvation Army as a limited company was set up here in 1982, and we're now moving into our first 12 months as a separate unit. This is not peculiar, of course, it is merely bringing the Republic in line with all the other countries in which the Salvation Army operates. We have always recognised a sovereign state, wherever we happen to be. And we have a growing working relationship with the various government departments. And that, of course, would be through my own office here. If, of course, we ourselves talk about our social and evangelical, I wouldn't like you to ever think for one moment that they are separate departments. One naturally gives birth to the other. John in his Gospel says, if you love people, don't go on talking about it, show it in action. And so therefore, if we talk about the two, it's because we believe the Lord has put them together. And that which the Lord has put together, we have no intentions of breaking asunder. And so that work of the Salvation Army, which has gone on for over 100 years here in the city of Dublin, I think will continue, in some cases in the social front, regrettably, because in an increasing society of progression in so many fields, one would think that the need for the Salvation Army as a social unit would long since have gone. In fact, the reverse is evident. And we've moved from very much the poorest and the down and out to many middle class working people are coming to us now with needs.
God's love to me is wonderful, that he should deign to hear the faintest whisper of my heart, wipe from mine eyes the tear. And though I cannot comprehend such love, so great, so deep, in his strong hands my soul I trust, he will not fail to keep. God's love is wonderful. Wonderful that he should give his son to die for me. God's love is wonderful.
God's love is wonderful. That he should deign to heed the faintest whisper of my heart.
At 17, I left home and I came to Navan. Then I got into trouble and was brought to court. And they got me in contact with probation officers and they got in contact with the Salvation Army in Dublin. And it's a hostel. So I started living there since January 82. And there are 6 other girls that live there, and we have our meals there. We have as much all the time as we can do what we want. Mostly there are a few rules, that you be in by 11 o'clock every night unless you have a late pass. There's a lot of girls who live there, sort of. They work as well, and I work part-time in catering business, and I also help out with the Salvation Army as much as I can.
Did you know anything about the Salvation Army before you had contact with them this way?
No, I never even heard about them. Never, till in Navan.
And what sort of an impression have they created on you now?
A very good one. I think that they're very helpful and very kind, and their religion has certainly sunk into me.
And you were previously a Catholic, dear?
Yes, I was.
And how do you feel now about the Salvation Army, which of course is a separate religion?
It does an awful lot more for me. It means an awful lot more. It's more warmer than the Catholic religion was.
And do you attend the services?
I do.
On a regular basis?
Every single Sunday.
And you feel you're getting something spiritual out of it?
I do.
As well as material?
Yes, I do. The other girls are from the same sort of background as I have, and they're very, very friendly and very easy to get on with. And some of them work, and more of them just help out with the Salvation Army appeal and that do general work for them, like sale of works and things like that. And
you take an active part in the Salvation Army? Do you work for them at all?
I done functions like the time we had Jewish people here, and I did work for about a week in the men's hostel, anything that goes on that we can help, we do, certainly.
And you regard it as a home, Deirdre?
I do, very much so. It's more of a home than I ever had. So,
when you work and you get paid for it, do you pay any money to the Salvation Army? Is it all for you?
When I work myself, yes, if I want to, I can give so much to them. But it's not made that I have
It's voluntary.
It's voluntary.
My name's Margaret England and I'm a lieutenant in the Salvation Army. And we have a residential hostel for girls who've generally not had much of a chance in their previous lives.
Have they been in trouble with the law?
Usually that's the case, yes, and they're directed to us by the probation service. At present we have 10 girls in residence. We're hoping to have room for 10 eventually.
And how long do they stay as the world is girls?
That too varies. We have had them for as short as 2 or 3 weeks. On the other hand, they've stayed for over a year sometimes.
Is this a rehabilitation course, you feel?
Yes. We try to concentrate on all areas of their life, on the physical, the mental and the spiritual.
Do you sense a change of attitude in the girls after they've been there some time?
Often, yes. Again, it depends very much on the type of girl that we have. It's interesting sometimes that when they first come in, they're very, very cautious and very, very insecure, very, very frightened of meeting strangers and new people. And gradually they begin to talk and discuss things with people who they don't know quite so well. I think one of the basic things you can see in these girls is that they're very, very insecure when they first come to us. They don't seem to be able to talk about themselves very much. One of the things we try to do is to help them to find jobs. It's very difficult, as you will know, in a city like Dublin. Very often some of them manage to get on ANCO courses, which is for a 6 week or a 12 week period. But if they are unemployed, we try to keep them occupied within the house. They all have their cleaning duties to do each day. Apart from that, we try to give them training in various house crafts. We try to help them to make their own clothes as a start to dressmaking. We've done candle making, we've done tie dyeing, we do cookery and baking. Also, we feel an important part of a girl's development is a pride in herself and the way she dresses. We try to show them how to look after themselves, how to clean their nails and cut their nails and shape their nails, and how to generally make themselves look and feel more confident. If we think their dress might be too complimentary to them, we try to encourage them to think about the way they look as well as the way they act.
Margaret, you're an officer in the Salvation Army. That means that you are, in fact, a minister of religion.
That's right, yes.
In terms of other denominations, or a priest, if you like.
Yeah.
Are you married?
I'm not.
You're not. What is it like to be a woman minister of religion? It's a very strange thing for a lot of people to imagine.
Yes, it is. It's an awesome responsibility, really. To know that there are lives under your care, which you can have a large part in either helping to make or helping to break. It's no light task. It's something which can only be done with constant dependence on God.
Do you think it's something that a woman can do as well as a man?
In the context of the Salvation Army, yes, as so much of our work is practical as well as spiritual leadership. Yes, I'm a spiritual leader for any of the girls who are under my care. But that's also in line with the practical and mental help I can give to them.
So there are some ways in which you can perhaps do it better than a man, because you're dealing mainly with girls. You might be more on a wavelength with them.
Yes, I think perhaps so. The normal things that girls are interested in, pop music, fashion.
Doing their nails, you said earlier.
Makeup. Talking about their boyfriends. It's often not too hard to relate to that. I think it's a stage which most girls go through, and having been through it, you can understand their feelings in it.
Lieutenant England, isn't it a fact that the Salvation Army encourages you, when you marry, to marry a Salvation Army officer?
If we're an officer ourselves, yes. And really, that's the only way it could ever work. As officers, we're subject to move when and where the Salvation Army guides us as to move. They issue us with our next appointment, and we are commissioned as officers, agree to go wherever the Salvation Army send us. It would cause a lot of problems if we had a husband whose wife was not an officer, or a wife whose husband was not an officer, and who had to be hauled around the country without that same commitment to the Salvation Army that the officer partner had.
My name's Loretta Fanning. I work in the hostel. I'm employed by the Salvation Army. The hostel's for girls on probation, and they generally come to us through the courts. We have had one or two who've sort of just phoned up, and we've put them up for the odd night. But I think it's going to be a bit more stricter now, and it will just be girls from the courts. We can take about 5-6 at the present moment, but I think they're hoping to put it up to about 10. They're very trusting in a way, really, because with me, I work here 40 hours a week, and it is a basis, I suppose, for a friendship. But the sort of friendship I have with them, sometimes it's unreal. One day I was out in the supermarket with one of the girls here, and she just turned around and she was shouting at me to come over and see something, and she called me Mummy, which made everybody look around. And I'm only a few years older than them, and it was pure. It wasn't done on purpose. I know they do it now on purpose, but the first time it was definitely a slip of the tongue, and I think it's what they're looking for. My parents are both Irish, although I was born in England. We used to come over every year, so I suppose that's what made me come back, as happy memories of holidays. But obviously things are different when you're living over here as to when you're over on holiday. But both parents are Catholic, and I was brought up in a fairly strict Catholic upbringing. My mother is very, very religious, and I think she still goes to church every day, every morning, and has very close contacts with the Catholic Church in our parish in Bushy. But we go to Mass every Sunday. I still go to Mass every Sunday. If I haven't gone to one of the Salvationist meetings, which I feel that as long as you pray somewhere, it's the same thing as if I want to go to communion, I'll go to Mass. But I'm quite happy going to one of the meetings. I feel there's an intimacy there that makes it easier to pray in a way. I haven't been for a while now, but it's because I think I'm deciding for myself that I have to take a stand on one side or the other, and I think I want to remain Catholic. I don't think I'd be a very good soldier, because I believe strongly in the Eucharist, in transubstantiation, and I think if they asked me not to believe in it, it wouldn't mean anything to become a soldier. It's difficult to explain. I think believing strongly as I do in the Eucharist, to suddenly be asked not to believe in it because I want to be a Salvationist, and there's a lot about the Salvationists that appeal, I don't think I'd be a good soldier, because how could I give up a belief like that?
So really, Loretta, you're not in the Salvation Army. You're employed by the Salvation Army.
Yes, yes.
Could you tell us about that?
Well, I answered an ad in the paper, and I think I was her last choice, really, because I'm only a few years younger, older than some of the girls here, and I think they were looking for somebody a little more mature. And I don't think she was quite happy taking me on at first, Major Ralph, but she actually said this to me afterwards, but she said that she was delighted that she did in the end, so I felt quite happy about that. But she was my first introduction to the meetings. I went along with her a couple of times, and Major Ralph is like maybe the lady you see across the road, retired or whatever, and you go along to a meeting with her, and she's almost physically, you know, praising Christ or our Lord. And it was strange, you know, I sort of had to sit back and think, you know, these people are there and they're singing and they're clapping and they're shaking tambourines, and I go to Mass on a Sunday and I'm sitting there, and sometimes I'm not even there really. And so since meeting them, I've become more aware. In the last few months, it's become a battle really with, I've come to realise that in the true sense of the word, I'm not a Christian. And there's so much I have to give up to become a Christian. It's so strange. I hate to sound like one of those born again. I can't stand that phrase, but it's almost true. And, you know, you think of born again Christians and the word makes me cringe because you're thinking of people sort of spouting off and...
But the very word, salvation, surely is equivalent to born again, isn't it?
Yes, I suppose. But these... You don't think of them as they're just like they're like Catholics. Like they have their own service. They read the Bible every day. They're very religious people. In fact, they're the most Christian people I've ever come across.
So even though you are not a soldier in the Salvation Army, but an employee, you have a great deal of respect for the Salvation Army.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think a couple of weeks ago I was at Mass and the priest said it almost. He said, you know, make sure that you haven't been sold a religion, and then when you get up to the gates, they're going to say to you, well, you know, you think you've followed a religious life, but you haven't. And I think, you know, I was appeasing our Lord by going to Mass on Sunday more than anything else. I just didn't live a truly Christian life, and I still don't. You know, I'll be the first to admit it, and it's a very hard step to take. You want to discuss it with your friends, and you just don't know where to start because they're not part of this group, you know. And I sort of almost want to go out and tell people, you know, look, you think you're being a Christian, but you're not really.
How do you think the contact of Salvationists has affected your religious life?
Well, it's made me a better Catholic.
I've been brought into the Salvation Army from when I was a child. My grandmother, my father and mother before me were Salvationists. And when I was 7 days old, I was brought to the Salvation Army as a baby. dedicated, which is christening really, the Salvation Army. I grew up in the Salvation Army, as any child grows up in a church with its parents. I was sent to Sunday school and I was brought to the Sunday meetings. However, when I was in my teenager years, when I was about 16 years of age, I wasn't sure whether I was coming to the Salvation Army out of habit or whether I was coming because my parents were bringing me. And so I left the army for 6 months and I tried to find my way in another church. But realizing that the Salvation Army was the church for me, I came back into the Salvation Army, and then I became a full member of the Salvation Army. I became a soldier within the Salvation Army ranks. And there I came and I attended the meetings, but didn't take a full and active part in the Salvation Army until I decided that I had to do more, not only within the Salvation Army, but for God. And I became the core treasurer, which is basically looking after the money week by week, doing the books with the Salvation Army officer who's in command, and generally making sure that things run smoothly. It isn't always easy to be full-time voluntary worker within the Salvation Army ranks, not when you hold down a full responsible job like I do, which takes up 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. But I feel that this is something that God has called me to do, and if God has called me to do this work within the Salvation Army, then he will give me the strength and the power to do it. I go out to the open airs on a Sunday night with the band. I teach Sunday school on a Sunday afternoon. I take an active part in the songsters on a Sunday evening. And I also, as I say, I'm treasurer, which means full responsibility for the money and for looking after the books within the hall.